Welcome to Section 9, where we talk about IT and information security. I'm Damian Hall.
And I'm Dorothy. And today we're going to be talking about our weekly patch review, Nessus, and VMware ESXi. So we did this patch review this week, and we had a few issues. One of the problems that we had is we got an email from Automox.
Well, it's not an email. It's a notification.
I'm sorry. Yeah, a notification from Automox. I call it an email because it was some guy saying, hello, Dorothy, and hello, Damien. And basically what they were saying is that our Google Chrome, you know, if we were using a version that was less than the 100 version, that we needed to update it sooner than later because there was a risk. And of course, as a non-CSIM part of the IT team, I panicked. Oh my God, we need to just update everything right now. And you had to remind me of certain things, and I really think you need to share this with everybody because a lot of people are like me. They think everything is an emergency the minute that it happens. Everything is critical, and that sometimes can cause some issues with the network. So why don't you go over what you were thinking and why you advised me to stop and think before we patched to the new version of Google Chrome?
Yeah, so we're going to put in the show notes a link to more information about this particular Chrome vulnerability. But yeah, so the notification comes up as we logged into Automox and says that Chrome needs a patch because there's an issue with it. There's a vulnerability. So when things like this happen, you want to be very careful about how you approach the patching process. So for us, it's not too big a deal because we actually don't have anything super fancy configured for our workstations and laptops. So in our particular case, if you had just patched Chrome, we would have been fine. Even if you had done a full patch, we would have been fine. However, in a larger environment, you need to be very careful about how you do these things, even when you have critical patches that need to be installed, because you want to make sure that when you push a patch out there, you do it in a way that's not going to interfere with people's work. You also want to make sure that it's not going to damage something. So let's say, for example, you're in an environment where you have 200, 300 workstations, and you're just patching them all on a regular basis. Well, what happens when a bad patch gets in there and that's sent out to all 300 workstations?
Well, nobody now, can work.
Nobody can work. You now have 300 workstations that have been damaged or broken. You have to go fix them. So it's better if you have a process by which you patch these systems. What I would recommend doing is have a representative sampling of systems that you patch. So say, for example, you have 10 or 15 systems you patch early. Some from HR, some from finance, some from IT, some from, you know, various groups around your organization. And in the organization that I used to work for, we actually had special things set up for Microsoft Office. There was an add-in that we had in there. So we had to make sure that they were part of that representative sample. So when patches went out, we were testing things that they had on their Microsoft Office. So if there was an issue with that and the add-in piece broke, we would know because we would have, you know, a couple of people from that sort of part of the organization. They would be tested, right? We're patching their systems. So if their systems break, we can say, okay, what do we need to do in order to make sure the next batch or the rest of that part of the organization is patched without having anything break? Or at least we're aware of that so we can be prepared when it does happen.
So would you choose people that didn't do critical stuff? Like, let's say you do finances. Would you choose a couple of people from a group that they say they did purchasing orders or they paid bills versus the people that actually pay the employees and did payroll? Is that how you do it?
No, this is how you do it. You say, okay, because sometimes people will say, okay, I'm going to do all of IT. IT's our test. Well, IT sucks because IT is not a representative sample,
right?
Because IT has its own applications. Finance may have something totally different.
Right.
So how can you say IT is a representative sample? You're only testing IT. And so if finance has a totally different application, like in the case of the previous organization I was working for, where they had an add-in piece to Microsoft Office for a certain number of people, for a group of people. So if those group, if that group is not part of your test, you're never going to know.
Okay, so you couldn't really specialize it just for somebody that did only a certain task because it may affect the other ones. I was just trying to figure it out.
So what you're trying to do is you're trying to test all the applications that are out there within your organization.
Right.
Not some, but all. And so if you only did IT, are you testing all? No, you're only testing IT applications.
No, but what I'm saying is on each department that you tested, how did you make the determination of who in that group gets tested? Was it one person, two people, three people?
Something like that. You don't want to do all because...
No, I get that you don't want to do all, but how do you determine, okay, let's just...
You just pick a couple of people.
Okay.
And all you're trying to do
is say... So that's how the selection's done.
All you're trying to do is you're trying to say, did I cover that group? Did I cover their applications? If you have one or two people from that group, you tested those applications. You patched them. And then you can say, well, did it work? Yes or no. If no, why? And if it didn't work, guess what? You only affected two people. You didn't affect 50, 60 people. Because if it's 50, 60 people, guess what? You're going to end up having to run down there and fix that. You may have to stay late. You may have to work a weekend.
So here's another thing that kind of, while I was in the process of panicking, going in my head, I didn't say this to you, but in my head I was going, I don't understand. We know what needs to be patched. There are vulnerabilities. It's been exposed for 3 days. Why not do it just now and talk about this later, right? And then you used an example that kind of gave me pause. It's not that I wasn't really understanding that you were saying, you know, don't do this before you go through all the process. I get that. That is a very valid and legitimate reason for not panicking and pulling that switch right away or pulling that patch right away. But the example that you use with the .NET framework, and you said to me, oh, okay, because sometimes if you go ahead and you panic and you just do the patch right away, some people may be in the middle of working and their computers will be restarting and they may lose some of the things that they're working on.
So here's what we have to talk about here. And you're bringing up the .NET framework because we've mentioned this before. Automox will tell you about critical and medium level patches for Windows. Doesn't do that for Linux, but it does it for Windows. So if you don't have a vulnerability scanner in your Windows environment, perfectly fine. If you have Automox, Automox will tell you which things need to be patched, that are critical or medium severity. So you can take a look at that and make adjustments, right? Or they'll tell you about things like Chrome needs to be installed because there's a vulnerability or updated. I like that about Automox. Now, when we talk about things like the .NET framework or how you push your patches from Automox, if I go to a policy and I click on that policy, it'll give me the option to push that policy to the group that it applies to. So, for example, we have a laptop group. We have a workstation group for Windows. We have a workstation group for Linux. If you push the policy, it will automatically reboot those systems. So you got to be aware of that so that when you go to patch certain systems, you're not rebooting people's machines in the middle of the day when they're not expecting that to happen. So what we decided to do was do the patching a little bit differently. We decided to say, let's go to the software section within Automox, look for Chrome, and push that out to the correct systems. So we're only patching Chrome. And Chrome doesn't automatically reboot the system because it doesn't require that. And then for my .NET framework, the thing that we have to think about is which version of .NET framework do our applications need? And since in my case, I don't have any special applications for .NET framework, just push the patch. But we don't use the policy. We go to software, we look for .NET framework, we see that that's my workstation. Because we can click on the patch and it will go to my workstation. And it will actually list all of the systems that need that patch. So my workstation is listed in there. And then you go ahead and push the patch. So when I reboot my Windows workstation, it's going to patch Chrome, patch .NET framework. And I should be good to go.
Right. And one of the things that you pointed out to me was like, you also needed to figure out if the version, the current version that you were using of the Net framework was needed for some of the applications that people may have. So doing the update sometime may kind of, how did that work?
So if you have specific applications written for a specific version of .NET framework, those would break if you update.
Would you be able to fix them by updating the applications as well? Or is that something that you need to have an outdated version of .NET work for them to run? How?
So that's something that you would have to check. You would have to go and test that. And that's why I say when you do your patching for larger organizations, you have to be able to say, we tested applications in different parts of the organization. So we have a representative sampling of all the applications that we use within the organization so that we can tell whether or not patching is going to work or break something. If it's going to break something, we need to take that information and figure out, okay, why did this break? What happened here? Can we fix this? Do we have to wait? Is there something major going on here? And then once you answer those questions, then you can move forward.
So how do you do a risk assessment when you're looking at a critical patch, but you don't want to do this type of thing? You don't want to sit in there and push that patch until you've gone through what have you.
You do your testing. So you can do a representative sampling. You can say, okay, I'm going to push this .NET framework out to a couple of systems in IT, a couple of systems in HR, a couple of systems in finance, a couple of systems in these other parts of the organization. And then you see what happens.
See, and for me, the panic part, it was like, oh my gosh, we're vulnerable. We need to fix it now because somebody can get in right now. How do I explain that to my boss? Because, you know, while we are doing this in a small network, we're also thinking about what the impact would be on a large network.
Exactly. And so what you want to be careful of here is don't panic. Think about what you're going to do, because oftentimes what happens is people panic and they are the ones that cause more damage than the vulnerability. So you have to be careful about how you do these things and make sure that you're not your worst enemy. Take your time to do your homework and figure out what's the best way to make sure that the entire organization gets the patch without breaking something in the process. So let's go ahead and talk about my Surface Pro, because we had an issue with that.
We had an issue with that. Actually, you hadn't turned your Surface Pro on for a while, so it was in need of regular patching. And of course, it had the outdated Chrome.
Right. But what happened when you checked the reports? What was missing?
What do you mean, what was missing?
What was missing in all the reports?
Well, the Google Chrome thing for your Surface Pro.
Exactly. So what happened is that when you use tools like Automox, and Automox is not the only one, pretty much all of them are going to be like this. You're going to have systems that are off.
Right? So our patch review, that was one of the things we had to consider. What was the impact to the devices that hadn't checked in?
Well, what you have to be aware of is that when you go and do a review like this, especially in a larger organization, there are going to be systems that have checked in. There are going to be systems that have not checked in. So you can't say, you know, when we push the patch out to my workstation, your laptop, or my Windows workstation, both are Linux workstations because they were actually turned on at the time. You can't say that you've seen it all. What you can say is that you've seen the ones that have checked in. And then you also have to be careful of systems that maybe you push a patch to, but it's not on, and you're not getting the updates. Because what we had with your particular workstation, your Linux workstation, is that we had to rescan it. Because when we looked at the pre-patch review.
Right. We looked at it, and mine was still showing that Chrome needed to be updated. That was the first thing that I noticed when we were going through our list of the overview report, the pre-patch report, and everything. Yours was fine. Your Google Chrome, you know, was gone from the list of needed to be done, but mine wasn't.
Yeah, so in a larger organization with lots of systems, let's say, for example, we had 300 workstations. Well, you're going to want somebody to check those things more than once a week, because you're going to have systems that are always constantly in and out of different stages of being, you know, or what do I call this? Different stages of checking in, right? And so if you look at the systems on Monday versus looking at them on a Thursday or Friday, you're going to have different systems checking in at different times. And you're going to see some systems coming in that are patched, some systems coming in that are not patched. Even though you did push a patch, well, here's a system you missed because maybe somebody was off for the day or out sick and their system was turned off.
So in looking at all of this, would you have a list, if you were a big organization, would you have a list of devices that were an absolute must that they get those critical patches right away? And if they hadn't checked in, would you have a list and say, okay, we need to contact these people because they have sensitive information. And if they turn it on, whenever they turn it on, we need to make sure that they get notified that, you know, this is an issue and they need to turn it on now to have all the patch, you know, whatever the patch is done. Is that how it's done? Or do you not care about that? You just worry about it when they check in?
You can do that. And that's actually a really good idea to do that. But you have to think about your organization. Do you have certain people that are super high priority touching, you know, sensitive information? Maybe you look at your CEO, you know, your admin people that have access to more information than others might. Maybe you look at finance, you know, they're touching the stuff that has to deal with money. You look at HR, maybe they need to be patched, you know, earlier than others, or they're more high priority than others. Because in a large organization, what's going to happen is you have 300 workstations. Well, how do you roll this out in a way that's making sense? Now, one thing that you do have to be careful of is that you don't jump over your test process and go directly to those people. What you want to make sure that you're doing is you do your test batch first on people who maybe don't really care, right? Like if their system breaks, you're like, well, okay, fine, it broke. I have to go fix it now. But who cares, really, right? They can wait. So those are the people you do first. Even if you have people listed as high priority, you do your test batch first, then you go to those high priority people.
Well, and the reason why I asked is because I'm trying to learn the process as you're giving me the responsibility to do, you know, the patching updates, you know, for the things that I do. So I'm trying to learn the process and I'm trying to learn the things that need to go in the process that are important and in a way that I go, you know, because for me, that makes sense. Look at your basic patch review that we do every week and then see if we have any issues, see if there is something missing, you know, look for those extra things that are not the norm that should have been there but weren't. So I was just trying to learn the process on that. What about Nessus?
So Nessus, I had that installed on my virtual machine in my Linux workstation. So I was using VirtualBox for that. Worked great. Was able to scan our DigitalOcean servers with that. Got a lot of good information from that. But then I decided to move that over to our new VMware ESXi server, which I'm going to talk about next. And that worked out great. And I had it set up to auto-scan for Monday and Friday. But then I learned something interesting today, because I had it set up to send me an email with the report information. And what I got back in the email for today's scan, because it scans it Monday and Friday. So I got an email today for Friday's scan. And the system actually said in the email, it said something about only using this for, what do we call that, educational purposes.
Oh, so you can't use it for business?
So apparently I missed that part of it, where you're not really supposed to use the Nessus Essentials for business use.
Oh.
However, it does work for 16 IP addresses total, and you can do the patch audit scan like what we're doing, and it works great. So if you are interested in doing the kinds of things that we're doing for learning purposes, that's great. But apparently in the description, it actually does say that you're not supposed to use this for business purposes.
Okay.
Now, we will be getting the full version of Nessus Professional at some point. We're going to upgrade to that or just buy that outright and then put that on a virtual machine.
Right.
And
but that's when once we start working with clients, right?
We're going to get there. So we're going to have the professional version at some point. so that we can do more types of scans. And one of the ones I would like to do is not the patch audit, but there's one where you can actually do a compliance test.
Oh, nice.
And then we can do that against some of the CIS benchmarks.
I was going to say, what is it used for compliance? What are they? What kind of?
So we're going to be using the CIS benchmarks. There's other ones you can do, but we're going to use the CIS benchmarks.
So does it have a choice of different things, or do you have to configure them?
We will look at that when we get there.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we're gonna get there, and we're going to be doing other things with Nessus at some point. So that's going to be interesting. I just wanted to make people aware of the fact that Nessus would like you to have the professional version for business purposes.
Okay. Well, you said something exciting about the VMware ESXi server. So you want to talk to us about that?
Yeah. So I got the free version of ESXi. All you have to do is sign up for an account. You can go and look for ESXi. You can download that. They give you a license key for that. And then the installation process is fairly straightforward. Now, I did have to look for instructions on how to install that from a Linux system, because what you need, just like when you do a Linux installation like Ubuntu, you want to take the ISO image and you want to put that onto a USB stick. So I had to figure out how to get that to work on a USB stick, and then I could actually do the installation.
A bootable
USB, yeah. So I'll put a link in the show notes to the instructions that I was using. And it's fairly straightforward. If you have at least some Linux knowledge, you can follow along. There are also Windows instructions you can find online that tell you how to use, I think it was Rufus. You use that in Windows. It creates the bootable USB stick for you. You plug that into your system, you boot from that, and then you do the installation. And the installation is straightforward. It just asks you, do you want to install this? Or would you like it to be installed on what hard drive? You pick one.
Do you have a wizard?
Yes.
So how hard was it to configure it?
So once you're in there, there is a configuration process you have to go through. Now, we're using a Shuttle PC with two network cards. It's got 32 gigs of RAM, and it's not a fancy setup, but it's one that's going to work well for us because we just want to have another machine that we can install virtual machines on, whether that's for things like Nessus or test systems. Like, we don't always have to have Nessus running. So if I need to test something and I need more resources, I can actually turn Nessus off and then run my test systems and then bring Nessus back online, and we're good to go. So those are some things that we're working on right now. And I'll put a link in the show notes to the actual systems that we actually use for that, or at least some more information about that Shuttle PC, what we used for that, you know, how much hard drive space do we have, what model is it. Again, it's got 32 gigs of RAM, which is a little bit limiting for some of the things we want to do. But then if we think about, we have our workstations, we have our laptops, both of them will do virtualization. We can use VirtualBox for that. So if we're in a situation where, let's say we want to do a big lab environment where we're testing, let's say, a Windows domain, and maybe we have a couple of Windows 10 workstations that we want to add to that, we can use our laptops and our workstations for other virtual machines, maybe like the Windows workstations. And then we can use the VMware server for the Windows domain controller that we would install there, or maybe two of them. So there's a lot of things we can do even with the environment that we currently have, because we can spread those virtual machines out across different workstations and laptops. So that actually went a bit more smoothly than I was expecting it to. And part of that's because I have some experience working with that. And then when you install VMware, if you're familiar with VMware, this just installs ESXi. It doesn't install the vCenter server. So there are some limitations to that, but in the way in which I'm familiar with VMware, it's actually easier to work with because you don't get all the options, and you have to go and kind of look through all the options that you have in there, because there's a bunch of different things you can do with vCenter server that you don't have on regular ESXi. But for us, that's perfectly fine. So anything else you want to add to this? Any thoughts about what we did so far?
No, I'm just, I feel kind of humbled by the fact that I panicked over such a little thing, but I was really glad that you were able to explain the reason why, because for me, if I know the why, the next time around, I think I'll be able to have a clearer mind and say, okay, don't panic. This is the process.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and summarize here. So sure. When it comes to critical vulnerabilities that you may have on your network, whether that's, you know, with Chrome, with .NET Framework, a server. Don't panic. Take some time to think about that. Where is this device on your network? How important is that? How bad is this particular vulnerability really?
What other devices are affected by the device?
Correct. What software may be affected? Mm-hmm. How are you going to effectively patch that vulnerability? So think about things before you do them. And then with Nessus, you need to have the professional version for business. That's the one they would like you to use. However, you can still use it for your home lab, playing around with that, learning how to use Nessus. It works great for that. And then with VMware ESXi, the free version is pretty awesome. And it's pretty straightforward. There's lots of resources online on how to install that. And it works great.
And
there's
a lot of... And you're going to add all the good bits in the show notes.
I'm going to add all that in the show notes. And then I had to do some searching for how to do the networking piece because I had sort of forgotten how that part works. And so I, again, looked it up online, found some basic information, remembered some things I had forgotten. And then I was able to get that Nessus virtual machine connected to the rest of the network. And I was up and running in a matter of minutes. So... Again, that worked out way better than I was expecting it to. But I think this is it for now. If you have any comments or questions, you can go to our website at section9.us and use our ticket system there. And then if you want to take a look at our show notes, we'll have them also at section9.us. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.